Okay. Spoiler alert. When we get to the case law, what you're going to find is the attorney-client relationship is a contract, and it is governed by contractual principles. So the idea of meeting of the minds is at the heart of whether there is an attorney-client relationship present. The rules are embodying that concept. Whether or not they explicitly say it or not, they are actually embodying that concept of, mostly speaking, our duties are going to attach once a client has asked for some kind of legal service and we've agreed to provide it. Now, what you'll see in some of the subsequent cases is the fight over, well, what does that mean, agreed? You know, if we were talking about a traditional contract, that would mean agreeing to all essential terms, which might, for example, include my rate. Does that mean that until we have agreed on all the terms of my engagement, I am not your lawyer? Or can it be that we have enough of an understanding that I am your lawyer that even if some of the terms are left open, my obligations have already attached? And believe it or not, we have answers to those questions, at least on the court side, less so under the rules side. Beyond that, the rules do say we are going to rely on substantive law. In other words, the rule's kind of a one-way street. We're not trying to create a civil liability standard. We're not trying to tell you anything that should happen in a courthouse. We're really just focused on the rules and the discipline of attorneys as professionals licensed by the state bar. But to help us decide when an attorney and a client have formed a relationship, we are going to actually look to applicable case law, which we'll be discussing for the rest of the presentation. It's the last sentence that I really want to draw your attention to right now. But there are some duties, such as that of confidentiality, that may attach before an attorney-client relationship has been established. That was news to me. Not that I would ever disclose the confidences of someone who was consulting with me and I didn't end up formally representing them. I mean, if I'm giving advice, and I've even said this before to what I view as either an actual or a prospective client, is listen, at this point, I'm not using anything you tell me. I'm going to put your name in my conflicts database. You know, if it turns out later that I've got somebody adverse to you, the fact that you're telling me stuff right now probably means I'm conflicted. So even now, before we have an engagement letter in place, we have an understanding that I'm going to be advising you. And if you decide not to use me or pay my bill, that doesn't really change the fact that I'm not going to use anything you tell me. Well, as it turns out, by doing that, A, I'm just making it certain that I'm going to owe that obligation, because far from disclaiming it, I'm actually affirming it. And two, I'm doing something that the rules would probably do even if I didn't say it. The rules, and you notice that the front sentence, you go back to that first sentence here in the preamble, most of the duties attach once you have the relationship, but not all. And we're going to preview for you that some duties, like confidentiality, might actually attach before you actually represent somebody. Now, so that you don't think I'm just trying to extract this out of a couple of sentences inside of a single comment to the preamble, let's look briefly at Rule 105. Rule 105, again, is the broad rule that says I have to maintain your confidences. Once I am your lawyer, I may be your conscience, but I am also your confessor. You can tell me things that I am not going to tell to other people. I am going to keep them close to the vest. And in fact, the circumstances under which I will ever be able to disclose them without your consent are extraordinarily narrow. In that rule, comment one to that rule notes that the fiduciary relationship, meaning the one we'll see in court, between the lawyer and the client, and the proper function of the legal system requires the preservation by the lawyer of confidential information of one who is employed, and this is the key, or sought to employ the lawyer. And so now we have the preamble saying, by the way, confidentiality can attach in advance, and we have the comment to the rule saying, this is the case. We believe that confidentiality attaches even before the attorney-client relationship. And it's the rules being fairly explicit without outright saying it. Now, if you read the paper, what you'll find is that there is actually a model rule that says this explicitly, that explicitly says an attorney owes a duty of confidentiality to a prospective client, absent certain disclaimers, which we're going to talk about in a second. The Texas rules don't explicitly adopt that rule, but the undercurrent of that rule is found in the comments. So how sure are we that this is the view of the rule and the body that is administering them? Well, for that, we turn to Ethics Opinion 651. This is a November 2015 ethics opinion and is given in the context of a website. Now, again, for what I do, I'm not taking in new clients via a web portal. For some of my friends on the plaintiff side of the bar, that is how they do a lot of their case assessment. And candidly, anyone whose email is out on the interwebs such that someone can email you, this is in theory something you need to pay attention to. At a high level, what has happened in this opinion is that a law firm has a web portal through which prospective, and let's be very clear, it is prospective. These are prospective clients. They are not current clients. Can submit information to the firm for the purpose of the firm deciding whether or not to represent them. Here's the question that comes up, and that is the subject of Ethics Opinion 651. If a potential client sends me information via this web portal, I never actually talk to them, but they send me information to my firm, so I'm deemed to have knowledge of it.